Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's been 2 months now that the novel coronavirus has been top of mind in South Dakota, and our health professionals are learning more about the contagion every week. So for the past several weeks, we've been taking a little time on Mondays to find out what we didn't know last week at this time and just give you the reminder and the update about coronavirus in your neighborhood and how it impacts your life. Dr. Shankar Kura is Vice President of Medical Affairs at Monument Health, and he's joining us now with an update. Dr. Kura, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Lori. Pleasure.
What are, first off, and I do want to backtrack for people who maybe haven't been paying attention or need the reminders about some of the basics, but I do want to ask first, you know, what's new in our understanding of SARS-CoV-2, this virus, and the disease that it causes, which is coronavirus disease or COVID-19? What are we already learning that maybe we didn't even know last week?
Yes, Lori, the coronavirus is a respiratory virus, as we all know, and its main impact is on a respiratory system, causing low oxygenation, and then eventually, in some cases, in severe illnesses, death. This is quite similar to the previous SARS virus of 2002-2003, and has some similarities with the MERS virus, both of which were also coronaviruses that affect predominantly the respiratory system, causing severe respiratory syndromes that can be lethal. What we're seeing right now compared to the last week is there's a decline in some of the cases across the country, especially in the bigger areas like New York City, where we had a lot of those cases. So some of these states are starting to plateau, and some are seeing a inflection point where those cases are decreasing. All this indicates that transmission from person to person is decreasing, but it does not indicate that the population is safe yet.
Why would that be? Why would the transmission be decreasing, but yet people would not be safe? Is that a result of our behavior?
Yes. The virus depends on communication of the disease between humans. And that's its primary mode of spread. And as long as there are susceptible individuals, this spread will continue. And what we know based on some preliminary figures is that percentage of individuals infected is not in the 60 to 80% range, which is what we would expect before we can say there's a sufficient herd immunity in the population to stop the spread. So it's probably in the lower 15 to 20% at its best case scenario in places like New York City. And places like South Dakota, it's probably much smaller, probably in the 1 or less than 1% range. So when you have large members of the community naive to the virus, it can spread. All we have accomplished in most of these states that have low numbers is slowed the spread. What we call flattening the curve is basically slowing the spread and spreading it out over a longer period of time so that the health systems are not overwhelmed.
And this is a huge success in a lot of ways, because that's what we were, you know, that was the cry in the beginning, was if we did the social distancing and if we, you know, gave our health professionals time to get ready, if we protected our vulnerable people, if we stayed home, we could flatten this curve. And now it's at the point where some people are doubting the reasons that we did that, because they're doubting whether it was true or not that we needed to do everything that we needed to do. That's sort of the conundrum that we face right now as people are restless to get back to what they think is normal, that the only reason we got here is because we were doing those abnormal things. Do I understand that correctly, or am I missing
Absolutely.
Some element of that?
You couldn't have put it better, Lori, and I don't think it's a conundrum. It appears that way when success shows that we have prevented a widespread of the disease, like, for instance, in Wuhan or in Italy or even New York City. I think this should not be taken any other way. If these measures were not in place, it would be a lot worse. We would have had lots of cases in the hospital and in the community, and a lot of those are not benign. Even the ones that survive, we're learning, causes extensive damage to the internal organs.
Yeah. Very important. Let's talk about that a little bit, because as people make some of these decisions, not from a policy level, I mean, just those individual decisions about where am I going to go and am I going to wear my mask when I'm there? How am I going to interact with the world? What's at stake here? So let's talk about, what can this disease do to people that has lifelong impact?
Yeah. It's a respiratory virus. As you can learn from the title, the name we've given this is SARS. It stands for Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome. And the syndrome encompasses a spectrum of illnesses that predominantly affects the respiratory pathways in the lungs. And the damage we're learning from the CT scans and the chest x-rays is very extensive to the lungs, even in those that recover. And then additionally, it also affects multiple organs. Usually when the lung is affected, the progression of the natural history of the progression of the disease is it affects other organs because the lung is essential to oxygenation and keeping the other organs healthy. So you end up in a situation where you have multiple organ failure or multiple organ impacts. And these can continue to diminish the quality of life of the individual that survives and be a problem long term.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that we also don't really understand what, some people who have had it and seem to have no ill effects, that it's maybe too early to say what happens with this long term because it is a novel virus?
Yes. That's certainly the truth, though we could extrapolate our understandings of the original SARS in 2002, 2003. The difference between that and this is a mutation in the spike protein. But what it translates to in the layperson's world is these two viruses cause this almost identical spectrum of disease. So if we were to learn from the first SARS, what we can understand is this is not a benign disease, especially when it affects older folks or people with comorbid conditions like diabetes, hypertension, chronic lung disease, chronic kidney disease, that it leaves behind significant damage to the organs.
Do we have any sense right now, Dr. Kura, of why some people who are apparently healthy get so sick, or why some, communities are spared, some, people are spared, and then it can ravage an entire family? It seems indiscriminate. Is it?
Yeah, and this is where research will finally come through, and there are several factors in most viral diseases, host immune response. Some of those actually cause more damage than the virus itself. And then there are folks that are considered super spreaders that actually spread it across a larger group than the normal. What we understand is one person can infect 2.5 other individuals. So there are other environmental and host factors that play a role in who gets this and how bad they develop symptoms and further damage to their organs.
Is that an area that you anticipate a lot to be revealed in the future, that we'll understand it so much better in the months to come, or is it possible that some of those things can remain a mystery?
Yeah, and I think we will learn a lot more this time around than we did with the first SARS. The first SARS, a lot of research was underway, and then most of the grants and funding were completely stopped as soon as the disease went away. And fortunately for us, that first SARS did not become a pandemic. It stayed as an epidemic and then died out. And this one, because it's a pandemic, we have a lot more information. And I expect the scientific community to come up with some very good findings.
Let's talk a little bit about the surge modeling and what we know now, and where the risks are in the days ahead as South Dakotans sort of try to figure out how do you handle a tourism season. It's a travel and tourism week this week. How do you handle visitors coming? What kind of decisions do we make as we plan our summer journeys? From the modeling that Monument Health is looking at in cooperation with Sanford and Avera and the Department of Health, the State of South Dakota, what are some of the things that you're looking forward to and are concerned about?
So, to simplify, the model works on four fundamental characteristics of any pandemic or illness of this sort. It's how many of the population are susceptible to the disease, how many are actually infected, how many are exposed or had exposure to, and then that includes people who have never been diagnosed but been exposed. And then how many of them have recovered? So using that, what's called the SIER model, which stands for all the words I just mentioned, this model takes into account these four characteristics. And if you were to look at it, we have been successful, at least in the state of South Dakota on the west side, more so than the east, to flatten this curve. What it indicates to us is these four elements of the model, the number that are still susceptible is pretty large. And all it takes is an exogenous spread, in other words, a person who's infected coming from either just outside our county or even a larger state or the surrounding states, to then become the seed that spreads it rapidly through. So most models that show flattening of the curve indicate that we need to kind of stretch this out as long as we can until a vaccine has been developed. And right now, I can tell you we are fortunate with the vaccines that there are 78 confirmed vaccine candidates that are undergoing trials, five of which are already in clinical trials. And I think the two that are more exciting is the one from Oxford University that's in its preliminary testing in the Rocky Mountain Lab in Hamilton, Montana. Showed that all six rhesus macaques that they did the testing on were exposed to heavy loads of the virus and all survived. And so they're going to the next step of the trials, which actually began last week. And then the other trial that's exciting is the one based out of our country here. Moderna is the company, and they're testing an mRNA vaccine. So really, the answer to all of these modeling is we have to continue to keep social distancing, continue to keep the spread from occurring until a vaccine becomes available, hopefully sometime early to mid next year.
Why so far have the cases been so low in West River compared to the problems East River? Is it simply population density of Minnehaha County and the Smithfield plant, or are there other factors at play?
Yeah, definitely population density is one, and then the measures that have been so well implemented, and that's the real warning for all of us, is to not look at this as something that you can ignore, because the more we understand this disease, it's pretty simple how it spreads, and if we can continue to maintain all the social distancing measures that we have put in place so far, which would mean it comes back to not having large gatherings, which would put us at risk.
All right, let's go over some of the basics before I let you go. For folks who are tuning in and just need some reminders, how do you keep yourself safe, especially if you can't stay home, permanently and never leave your house? At some point, you might have to go to work or you might have to go get groceries. What are some ways to keep yourself as safe as you can?
Yeah, straightforward stuff like we've been doing, social distancing, try not to gather in large numbers, hand washing, don't touch your face, wear a mask so you don't spread it to others, and stay home as much as you can. And those are all the same things we've been doing so far. And I know patience is wearing thin in the community, but this is the time to continue to do what we've done so well.
Yeah. Are you concerned? Are you optimistic? What is a good word to sort of explain how you look at the days ahead? What, maybe it's what concerns you the most. Is there anything that you just sort of that keeps you up at night?
Yeah, I would say cautiously optimistic, and I have faith that most of us will heed all the things that the scientific community is informing us. My biggest concern would be large gatherings, especially on the scale of a rally, for instance, that would put us at risk, the community at risk for a spread of
Yeah.
this disease.
Yeah. Would you address, before I let you go, therapeutics and what we're learning about some treatment for this, whether it's the remdesivir or the hydrochloroquine study, or therapeutics that of the plasma, human plasma, what is encouraging there in treatment?
Yeah, most of the trials are still underway. So preliminarily, the hydroxychloroquine treatment has not quite lived up to its promise. It's still, kind of a jury's out there on that one. As far as remdesivir, there are some advantages to it. Again, not to the extent that we would consider that a cure. And these are just going to decrease the duration of symptoms in some select groups of people. Like I said, the data is still very preliminary. And then the convalescent plasma is exciting. At least we have a large trial underway, and we are part of it, with the Mayo Clinic being the lead in this effort. Hopefully, that will probably hold more of a promise than the other two. But we'll have to wait and see because sometimes what appears to be a logically good treatment doesn't bear out in real life.
Right. Dr. Shankar Kura is Vice President of Medical Affairs at Monument Health. Thank you so much for being here again. We really appreciate all you're doing to answer questions and help people understand this more fully week by week. Thanks.
My pleasure, Lori. Thank you.